Thanks, Ethan. So I'm very glad to be here at Sophia Anthopoli. So this talk is on overlay quality of service. The particular areas I'm going to cover are how can we use closed loop building blocks for quality of service, and overlay just happens to be one of the applications of this kind of a mechanism. I just want to let you know that I'm trying a new experiment of recording my talk and putting it online. So I did this for another talk I gave in UC Berkeley, and it went out well, so I hope this will also come well. So if you need to refer to this talk, the audio will be there online by next week. Okay, so this work is primarily some of the PhD work of David Harrison and Yong Jia, and master students Arvind Venkatesan. There are other people who have worked on this. These are Rahul Sachdev, Kishore Ramchandran, who have helped us with the implementation, and Sthananathan Ramakrishnan. So the broad overview of this talk is as follows. From the time quality of service as a field for, especially for wired networks, has been considered, people have been using open loop building blocks like schedulers, shapers, and then you have a signaling protocol that goes and coordinates these entities, and you use the results from the classical quality of service area to achieve these objectives. Okay, so we were interested in seeing to what extent closed loop building blocks, like congestion control building blocks, could be used. So this talk is in the intersection of congestion control and quality of service, so to speak. So we argue that some interesting aspects of quality of service, not all the problems, can be posed as a congestion control problem. Okay, and therefore we can pose it in Kelly's optimization framework. But there are some significant challenges. When you want to pose something in Kelly's optimization framework, we start talking about utility functions, and for quality of service, we sometimes are interested in minimum rates or weighted fare shares and so on and so forth. These immediately start hitting into non-concave utility functions. So what can we do about them? Can we work around them? And normally in quality of service, there is the one of the important issues is as a signaling protocol comes in, you do admission control. Now, if you do not do admission control, the system will become unstable because you cannot support the extra load. Whereas in congestion control is meant to handle overload situations, that is when you have extra load, you have a graceful degradation of performance. So we can ask an interesting twist to the quality of service question, that is, can we even get away without doing an admission control? What is the kind of services we can offer with such a lightweight paradigm? Okay, so this will become a little more clearer as I talk more. So the work we have done is to essentially, instead of posing just a single problem, we pose two related optimization problems, and we call one of them an auxiliary optimization problem. And these are related in the sense that if you solve one, the other is also solved under certain conditions, and under the other set of conditions, one of these problems go away, and you just solve the other one. Okay, so that is the way the structure of these problems are. And then we will see that there will also be some constraints in the Lagrange domain. Okay, so these all will also translate into specific schemes of congestion control. So the big picture of what we want to do, where we were motivated by this, is that even though a lot of quality of service capabilities have been developed, they have not been deployed in many ISPs for various reasons. I mean, they don't want to have an increase in the complexity of the network. That might be one reason. The other reason, probably which is more accurate, is that when you have very fine-grained quality of service offered to many users, ISPs have to go and configure every building block in the network. Like they have to go and configure schedulers, they have to go configure shapers at a very small fine-grained flow level. And so the configurations of millions of parameters becomes a problem. So so that is one of the challenges. So how can we take a network that pretty much offers FIFO queuing inside the network, which is how the congestion control algorithms tend to work? They assume a network of FIFO, first-in, first-out queues, and then they have closed-loop operation from what we call end-to-end. Here we try to offer closed-loop operation edge-to-edge with a network which is largely FIFO queues. Okay, and there is an optional queue management algorithm you could put inside these network nodes. So essentially, we are trying to use the congestion control style building blocks and asking what can we do with them. And why this is interesting, we have new providers like Akamai and so on who own a lot of nodes in the internet, or they own a lot of sites in the internet, and they can buy point-to-point links very cheaply. And they might be interested in forming services which are provisioned completely at the edge of the network and offered to consumers who might be interested in multimedia services. And these could be classified as bronze, silver, gold, etc. And you could get away with weak admission control notions, etc. Okay, so it's targeted for future overlay network services. Okay, and the goal is to have reduced complexity. So if you take a look at the traditional quality of service model, you typically have a control plane architecturally where you have signaling, admission control, provisioning or traffic engineering in terms of routing management. And in the data plane, you have the building blocks such as shaping, policing, marking, primarily leaky bucket based shapers at the edge of the network, followed by scheduling and buffer management techniques inside the network. So qualitatively, at the high level, what do I mean when I say I want to use closed loop control? Okay, what is possible and what is not possible with closed loop control? So think of a scheduler which like the basic priority scheduler or weighted fare queuing scheduler. How does it offer you some service differentiation or service isolation? Two important problems in quality of service are either I have to provide some degree of isolation between flows, or I need to provide some service differentiation between flows. So it does this by enqueuing these flows or these bundles of traffic aggregates into different queues, and then has a service policy. Okay, on a packet by packet basis, then it can offer some service differentiation or isolation behavior, depending upon the kind of scheme you use. Priority scheduling would give you service differentiation, but not necessarily isolation, whereas round robin could give you both. Whereas in a FIFO queuing system, we know very well that the service which is experienced by flows is highly dependent upon the arrival patterns of all of the flows. Okay, but now what I talk about is these dotted lines where I'm overlaying loops or closed loops from edge to edge, I'm detecting overload, okay, or detecting congestion or contention for the resource through a congestion control mechanism. And then at the edge, depending upon how I do my congestion control, I can provide service differentiation. So the limitations of this are this will only work on round trip by round trip time, and it cannot work on a packet by packet basis. So if you are looking for packet by packet basis service, this cannot offer you that. Okay, but the applications over the last 10 years have become more. We just had a talk on adaptive playout and so on, have become more and more adaptive. So they are able to tolerate some degree of variance in service. Okay, so another way of looking at this qualitatively continued is how does the service look like? Consider a simple service where it's similar to what you can get in a frame relay line. Okay, remember, the overall talk is structured as follows. Today, you are getting a leased line or a frame relay line. These are much more costly or non-IP based services which are provisioned using a network that is completely set up for quality of service. You're trying to emulate this with an IP network that is primarily FIFO based, and you are trying to put edge boxes and having edge-to-edge coordination, and you want to replace this abstraction with an IP pipe abstraction that gives you something similar. So in this example, I'm trying to give you an IP pipe for this particular flow that has a minimum rate of 4 megabit per second, and then it wants a fair share above that. Okay, so this is similar to a frame relay service that gives you a minimum rate called CIR or committed rate, and then you can get a fair share above that. Okay, so you see that our scheme over here has a transient phase which corresponds to some sort of a congestion control convergence mechanism, and then in steady state you have these minor oscillations about your target rate. Okay, so these are the trade-offs. Okay, so you're going to see transients in congestion control schemes. And you're going to see your guarantees achieved only in steady state. Okay, whereas in quality of service, whenever we think of quality of service, we want quality of service on a packet by packet basis or on a very small time scale. So here, when I say quality of service, I mean what is the service you get in steady state? Okay, now this might sound when will I reach steady state, but that's a control theory question. Depends upon the kinds of schemes you can build. Okay, and there's been increasing degree of schemes that are coming out which can respond faster, have better transient performance, and very solid steady state performance. So as we get those schemes into the system, they can be leveraged by the techniques I'm going to talk about today. So the other flow which is competing just gets the fair share of the remaining. So here there's a 10 megabit per second bottleneck, and I have a 4 megabit per second guarantee. So I get 3 megabit per second over this, and the remaining 3 megabit per second goes to this flow. I should note that even in frame relay service, you cannot get this extra fairness above the minimum rate. Okay, frame relay does not guarantee you this. It provides some mechanism for doing this. So this is a much more powerful service than frame relay service, which is one of the most popular services out there. Okay, so in addition to being able to emulate some interesting services, and I'll talk more about exactly what I mean by that, it also has several architectural advantages. Okay, so I come from a strong protocol and architectural background. And by architecture, what we mean is where do we place a function? Okay, suppose you want to do a closed loop. When we say end-to-end, the function is placed end-to-end or in only the end systems. So whereas if I say a QM scheme, the function is placed at every node in the network or every potential bottleneck in the network. So architectural advantages means that you can have some placement of functionality advantages. And let's look at what I mean by that. Without a congestion control scheme, suppose you're trying to arbitrate and provide quality of service, if I have an overload situation, this is an NS sort of animation, I can have queues somewhere inside the network and the queues blowing up. If I use a closed loop scheme, what I do is I maintain this queue at, I maintain this system at high utilization and low queue length, and I move the queues to the edges. Okay, so the queues have been physically moved from the core to the edges, okay, conceptually, and then you also notice that the size of these queues has been sort of distributed. So in other words, you're taking the queues, the total queue length, and you're doing a divide and conquer based upon the number of loops you put on the network. Okay, so this is fundamentally another difference from how frame relay operates. Okay, if you have a network that's not well provisioned or not provisioned for overload, you can have all the queuing inside the network, whereas here we are talking about queuing in the network, at the edge of the network. Now, another interesting thing when you have queuing at the edge of the network is you can start, the edge of the network is closer and closer to the application, which means you can start incorporating application awareness into the process of managing these queues. So not only do you have smaller queues at the edge of the network, I can start doing transport aware or application aware management of these flows. Okay, and there are several instances of this already out there in the marketplace. Like there's a company called Packeteer which makes TCP rate control boxes which sits at the edges of the network and manages these sort of flows. Okay, let's move on. So from a placement of functions point of view, I have consolidated these functions at the edge of the network, which is interesting. Okay, and then what that means is all my parameter provisioning, all the complexity of my schemes is edge-based. Okay, so this is a growing theme among networking researchers in terms of quality of service, and edge can play a larger role and participate in application-level QoS. Okay, I'll talk about what I mean by this later. Okay, another quick qualitative picture. In the diff serve or differentiated services, how's this stuff different from differentiated services? You have, when you have overload inside the network, you'll do packet dropping inside the network. Whereas in our scheme, we will move the packet dropping and traffic management decisions to the edge of the network. Okay, here it will be zero queue. Okay, so let's move on. So basically what I've tried to give you an intuition for right now, not formally so far, is that quality of service or certain aspects of it, like give me minimum rate, give me weighted fare services, and later I'll also argue give me low delay, can be modeled as congestion control problems. Okay, now these have, if you look at the main quality of service issues that have been considered over the last decade, bandwidth guarantees, delay guarantees, and loss management have been fundamental issues. So we are starting to come to a stage where we can get a much, we can get a good grip on this even in congestion control in the steady state. All bets are off during transient, but in steady state, we can offer very interesting behavior. So we are now going to start talking about how can I pose it in a more formal framework. That is Kelly's optimization framework, and what do I do about all these non-concavity issues? Okay, so for the purposes of our talk today, I'm going to be focused on a service which is the following. Okay, I want to give a minimum rate service, okay, and this I call an expected minimum rate, okay, for reasons that will become obvious later. And then if I do not do admission control, okay, this service under overload will degrade into a weighted proportional fair service, okay, which is like a priority service, for example, okay, or similar to a priority service. And then if you have even further overload, it will degrade into just a normal fair service. Okay, that is, there might be no weighting of that. Okay, now why is this interesting? It's because you can organize flows at the edge into platinum, gold, silver, etc. And then when you have overload situation, you first degrade the service of the bronze flows completely, and they first move from the minimum rate to a weighted proportional fair and so on. And then the gold will get affected. Only then last the platinum will get affected. So all these things, class-based services, we try to do by putting more complexity inside the network. I'm saying that we can take all that complexity out. Okay, so a quick run-through of the Kelly's optimization formulation. The network optimizes a problem where I'm just simplifying this to show the proportional fairness, where I have a log x type utility function, and the user will optimize its own problem where it chooses a utility function and it responds to a congestion price. Okay, normally in the Kelly's framework, we expect concave utility functions, okay, and preferably continuously differentiable and so on. So if you try to look at the optimum in a multidimensional curve, this would be the optimum if you take the sum of utility functions. Okay, this is a very qualitative picture. Now, the problem with quality of service, so suppose I want to pose this problem I was interested in. I'd like to give a minimum rate. So let's say this is my expected minimum rate I want to give this user. Say this is 0.4 megabit per second. And then below this minimum rate, okay, suppose I have an overload situation, I'd like to offer a weighted fair share. Okay, this weighted fair share is captured by this weight W here, where this is 10 here and this is log x for the other flow. Okay, so I have one flow that is just a normal proportional fair share flow, and the other flow that is given a minimum rate and a fair share above it, okay, which is like log x essentially, but subtracted the 0.4. And under certain circumstances, you can have, if you have an over-provisioned system, you can have it degrade this manner. Okay, so this is a non-concave function. Okay, but we know very well that this cannot be plugged directly into the Kelly's optimization framework. Okay, but luckily, that is not what we want to solve. Okay, so there has been a misconception in the quality of service and congestion control communities that what you want to try to solve in the QoS problem is try to plug non-concave problems into Kelly's optimization framework. Okay, so one of the key things that we did was to just simply point out that that's not what you want. Okay, what you really want is the following. If you have a sum of two non-concave functions, is essentially what I talked about earlier right here, which this is, there's one line which represents the expected minimum rate idea and a fair share above that, and then I have a graceful degradation to a weighted service idea under over subscription conditions. So you would normally have multiple maxima, and you'll have this ambiguity problem of where do I converge and so on, and you cannot develop an iterative algorithm that can converge to this. But luckily, what we really want is under oversubscribed conditions, we want a desired allocation that is here, okay, not here or here. Okay, so if you just Google at this point, it looks like it's a pretty much like a concave area. So it suggests to us that if we are careful in formulating a problem, we can essentially formulate concave utility function based problems and sort of switch from one problem to the other as we are switching regimes from undersubscribed to oversubscribed conditions. Okay, so that is the essential idea of the entire work. Okay, so here's how we start formulating it. So suppose I am not oversubscribed. That is, there's the no oversubscribed case. I formulate a simple auxiliary problem. Okay, the auxiliary problem just says that take the sum of the assurances or the expected minimum rates and subtract it out from the total capacity. Okay, and consider a proportional fair share allocation XIP, which is XI, which is the total allocation minus the guaranteed rate or the minimum rate. Okay, so essentially this looks like as though I take the network. Oops, what happened? Must have been something here. There's an animation went out. So essentially I have converted a network N into another network N tilde, where I have taken out the portion of the capacity that has been given for minimum rate. Okay. So that's fairly straightforward. Okay. Now this works under oversubscription. Okay. But now the problem is, suppose I want to simultaneously handle both oversubscription and undersubscription. So suppose this, the primary problem that we want to solve is, I want to solve a problem that looks like this, where I have AI ln XI. Okay, this is like a proportional fairness allocation subject to the usual constraints. And what I have done right now is I have defined an auxiliary problem which looks exactly similar to this. Okay, it is like a proportional fairness allocation AIP ln XIP, where XIP was defined as XI minus XIE, and subject to constraints where this is the capacity constraint, which is subtracted, you subtract out the sum of the minimum rates. Okay. So if you are undersubscribed, that is, if you're overprovisioned, you will solve this problem. And by solving this problem and just adding back the minimum rate, you will essentially have solved the primary problem. Okay, that is step number one. Okay. Now, the step number two is that if you have, let me take this carefully. If you are oversubscribed, the meaning of oversubscription is that the sum of these allocations, okay, sum of these minimum rate allocations is larger than capacity. Okay, then this will be negative, and you will start having trouble with these constraints. So you cannot meet these constraints. So under that condition, what we do is we switch back to the primary problem. Okay, so if you just take a look at the primary problem is nothing but a weighted fairness problem. So what we do is we propose these two problems, define conditions of oversubscription and undersubscription. Under the conditions of undersubscription, you solve the auxiliary problem, and you would have solved the primary problem anyway. Under the case of oversubscription, you just cross this out and say, I'm not solving this fellow. I'm going back and solving the primary problem. Okay. So there are some interesting hybrids where you can have some flows which are platinum flows that solve this problem anyway, and the other flows, like which are bronze flows, would have gone back to the primary problem. So these are possible. So how do we capture these constraints? Oops, it's coming out. Okay, so essentially what we do is we look at this variable AI, okay, and we start putting limits on this AI. Okay, so this way, if you can think of this AI as a Lagrange multiplier, we start putting constraints on that domain, on these Lagrange multipliers. So if AI hits a capital AI, okay, or a maximum value, I move over to this problem, and I also have a queuing constraint. I cannot overflow the maximum possible queue in the system. And if these constraints are not hit, that is, if I'm within my queue limits and my Lagrange multipliers are smaller than pre-specified provisioned limits, then I will be in this problem. Okay, so this is the basic idea, and we'll look at the implications of this in a moment. Okay, so the reason I call this AI rather than WI. Okay, normally in the Kelly's formulation, we call it WI or a simple weight function, right? So it turns out this AI has a physical significance, okay? And we'll define a quantity called accumulation, and AI is just the sort of short form for accumulation, which can be viewed as a weight, which can be viewed as a physically significant accumulation parameter that relates to queuing, and it can be modeled as virtual delay or virtual queues, just like Srikanth has recently done. AVQ algorithm using virtual capacity and so on. So it has a lot of interesting consequences. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take a slight detour to develop the notion of accumulation, because that will turn out to be an important parameter that helps us steer which problem we want to solve. Based upon the constraints on that accumulation parameter, whether it's less than or larger than capital AI, I will steer which is the problem I want to solve. Okay, that's the idea. So this is the key thing. Before we did this, we looked carefully at why can't we do the steering business of jumping from one problem to the other just using loss or some other thing is already out there. Like, why not just use TCP or why not use weighted AIMD? Okay, so we have a separate paper on this to show that, you cannot adequately do the steering. You don't get an extra degree of freedom to deal with this. As a result, you cannot get a large dynamic range of quality of service. Suppose I want to get even a simple thing like 1,000 is to 1 type weighted service. You cannot do that with a ROS-based scheme. Okay. Why not use directly AQM or ECN schemes? What we want to do is first we want to keep that AQM as optional. Architecturally, it's interesting. And then we can show that we can plug in an AQM where we need it. Why not just use TCP Vegas? Some of you might be familiar with TCP Vegas that was proposed in 1994. Vegas also has some similarities to accumulation. but we'll talk about accumulation as being a more general concept, and Vegas is a special case of it. And more importantly, the estimation methodology which is proposed in Vegas, we've shown that it's not robust, and we propose a better estimator. Okay, so the other idea I mentioned to you was we tested out using loss-based schemes. Why not use weighted loss-based AIMD, take out TCP-related effects, just use UDP. What happens is that you don't get a dynamic range of capabilities. Whereas if I want a target ratio, I can get that. Okay, I'm not going to go into great detail in this, but we pretty much ruled that out faster. And why not TCP Vegas? Because it has some problems with estimation of the quantity I call accumulation. Okay, now, man, it's not very good here. Okay, so there are some cases where if I have a small change in the end-to-end delay or the round-trip time delay, either the utilization will drop down to zero, or there's a variation proposed by Moe and Waldrand, which can do some estimation better, but we found that that is actually unstable. Okay, so the our scheme which we, by the way, it's called Monaco, based upon this area, it is stable and does things right. Okay, so let's go into the idea of accumulation. What is it? Accumulation can just be thought of as an entity for a flow. It's a measure for a flow. It is the time. It's a sum of the bits of that flow which is sitting in the network. Okay, so that is the basic idea. But it's not a simple sum. It is just a. It is a sum which is time shifted. That is, I sample the bits which are sitting in this bottleneck, this bottleneck, this bottleneck, and this bottleneck at different times, and then sum it up. Okay, so we do this time shifting for technical reasons. Okay, so you see that this is a dynamical concept. Okay, and in steady state, this is the sum of the bits. Okay, if you take Kelly's analysis and so on, it looks at steady state or equilibrium analysis, and in that case, it's just the sum of the bits of the flow in the network. Okay, so in a more general sense, it's dynamics. Okay, so this is the concept, and a large number of schemes, we show that there are infinite number of schemes that can be developed to try to estimate it and then react to it, and develop a control theoretic method of controlling based upon this, and these are all methods of providing estimators for it. Okay, so the, how do I show this? Okay, so the physical meaning of accumulation is as follows. Suppose this is my source and this is my destination, or edge to edge, right? Consider a ray which is being shot through the network, which just goes through the network without sitting in any queue. Okay, it actually experiences only the propagation delays. Okay, and the propagation delay of each link is assumed to be constant in this analysis. And what you do is, as this ray goes through the network, you pick samples of these queues of my contribution to the queue, which is called Qij, which is the contribution of the queue of flow J. Flow I to bottleneck J. And the time at which I sample it is the time at which the ray arrives here. That's why the time shifting is there. So the reason I do the time shifting is I can actually develop a measurement methodology that can go and pick measure this thing. So I add up all these Q values and I sum it up, and this gives me accumulation AIT. Similarly, you can measure AIT plus delta T, and it turns out that the difference between these accumulations is just an input-output phenomenon. So what this means is that I don't need any other support from the inside the network. I can just measure the number of bits I send in minus the number of bits I send out as controlled by these rays. I talked about abstract rays. And then this, if I take the difference of that, that is the change in accumulation, okay, which is this definition. So that is a simple idea. Okay. Now, the reason it is interesting is because Q behaves exactly in the same way. If I take a period of time and say what is the input minus output, the difference is the Q. Okay, so for Q delta Q between T plus delta T is input minus output. So accumulation also has a similar form. It has input minus output. The only difference is that this input is measured at a different time. It's a time shifted input. So this quantity here is the propagation delay from source to destination. So it's the number of bits. Actually, if you see here, this is the, so I measure the input for this period of time and the output for this period of time. So it's just related to measurement issues. So what this means is that the collective queuing of a sequence of FIFO queues, or a sequence of routers which implement FIFO queues, is similar to that of a single FIFO queue, and so on. And the quantity I use is accumulation. Okay. Now, what you can do is you can start defining control policies based upon accumulation, and the control objective is to keep accumulation to a target. Okay, let's say AI star. So remember that each flow can have a different target. Okay, so this is the fundamental idea here. So once I can do this kind of an objective, then I can use that as a steering parameter. And then you can, as if I'm below this target, I would have some sort of rate increase. If I'm above this target, I would have rate decrease. And you can have an infinite number of control algorithms which can do things like this. Here's a simple algorithm which is linear in AI t minus AI star. Okay, so what we did was we developed a scheme that provides a measurement of this concept. Okay, so what we do for this is to emulate a ray being shot from the input to the output. What I do is I request that the bottleneck provide two queues. One queue is used for control packets, okay, and the other queue is used for data packets. Okay, and a control packet goes through the control packet queue, which is higher priority. Okay, and we make sure it's extremely low utilization, so we don't expect any queuing. Queuing in that queue will be negligible. And so you can think of a control packet that goes through that queue as the ray which I'm interested in. And then what we do is we also at the same time have another control packet, which we call an in-band control packet, that goes through the data queue. Okay, so essentially it goes and wades through all the queues and shows up over here. Okay. So it's fairly straightforward to show that this difference in number of bits which have been received between the arrivals of these two control packets is the accumulation. So this is a much more faithful measurement of what we want to do in terms of accumulation. That is, what they tried to do in Vegas was a less robust estimate, and we show that. I'm not going to get into that. So what the kind of support we require, normally in congestion control, we think of there's only a single FIFO queue. Okay, so we have now expanded the notion of congestion control to consider an extra queue just for giving us a new degree of freedom, that is correct estimation of RTTP or the propagation delay. Okay, now one might think that this is actually a great burden on existing routers. Okay, well, if you look at existing routers, it's not at all a great burden, because all existing routers have tens or thousands of queues, okay, depending upon how new they are. And typically they don't use them. Okay, so what we are asking is to pick two queues, and we are also asking to just use existing IP, where IP provides a field called IP precedence, where you can map control packets to a higher precedence and lower precedence. Okay, IP precedence is also not used greatly except for routing packets, so we could use this for congestion control. So essentially the summary of this is that I can take the routers which exist today and provision two queues. Okay, have a priority service schedule between them, and use simple IP precedence to provide this facility. Okay, so in general, what you can do is if you have many queues, you can take a network and carve out virtual networks out of it, and then run these schemes on top of that. And at the edge, you can give different services based upon these virtual networks. Okay, more on that later. Okay, so a quick my goodness, these are really bad. Okay, all I wanted to say is that this basic set of schemes called accumulation-based congestion control schemes, it's easy to show that they satisfy proportional fairness or weighted proportional fairness constraints. And we have also implemented them on Linux. Okay, so actually this is all reporting Linux-based actual measurement results, not simulations. Okay, now the entire detour was for the one particular fact that I'd like to use it as a steering parameter for quality of service beyond just congestion control. Now, why is this interesting? So we can start looking at accumulation it fits very well with the normal KKT constraints type in linear optimization. If you look at accumulation, it is nothing but xi, the input rate, minus multiplied by the RTT with queuing, or round trip time with queuing, minus RTT propagation. So this is essentially the queuing delay. Okay, so this is xi multiplied by the queuing delay, or in other words, the window size is nothing but the amount of bits which are held in queues in the network plus the number of bits which are sitting on the links in the network. Okay, so this is one constraint, and then this is a complementary constraint which is based upon the queuing delays, and these are all usual constraints, like the sum of xi should be smaller than t. The reason I put this up is because this matches exactly the types of constraints we see in the nonlinear optimization. And if you compare these two things, we see that accumulation-based schemes solve this nonlinear optimization problem, where AI can be viewed as the weight parameter. Okay, now AI not only has all these nice physical capability, and AI is nothing but a sigma p, which can be viewed as the Lagrange multiplier. Okay, so the summary of this discussion is the following. Accumulation-based congestion control solves a nonlinear optimization, which is AI ln xi, and accumulation can be viewed as the weight of that nonlinear optimization. But in a physical sense and a control theoretic sense, accumulation is a steering parameter. I can use it to do other things. In particular, I can use it to determine what is the equilibrium allocation. Okay, so specifically, the equilibrium accumulation allocation, that is, if I give a flow an accumulation of AI, it decides what its rate will be. Okay, that is xi. Okay, this is illustrated here a little more. If two flows are going on the same path, okay, in this case I'm just taking a single queue, but also holds for a series of queues, the ratio of their queue contributions is the ratio of the rates. Okay, so if I take the sum of all the queue contributions, the ratio of the accumulations is the ratio of the rates. Okay, so for two flows going on exactly the same set of bottlenecks. Okay, so essentially it uses the simple idea that buffer occupancy decides the rate allocation. And so the other interesting aspect is that it has a degree of freedom because the equilibrium allocation is now decoupled from the dynamics of the congestion control schemes. If you look at AIMD, you're using you're trying to do differential AI or differential MD to get quality of service, where you're coupling the dynamics with what you want to achieve in equilibrium. It's not very good. Okay, so essentially what we have done in terms of the Kelly formulation is that we have this either or condition. We have these two problems. When I have no oversubscription, I'm in this regime where the sum of my minimum rate allocations is less than C, which is the capacity constraint. And otherwise, I might be limited by my finite buffer. Okay, for this talk, I ignore the buffer constraint. Assume that buffers are always available. Okay, that's the number one. And I'll talk about how to deal with them. Okay. The other aspect is that now I can have a target for the accumulation, which is the capital AI. Okay, so accumulation is less than AI. Okay, so now what happens is that by using these sorts of constraints, you don't necessarily need an explicit admission control. Essentially, you have a variable capital AI which you can set for each flow or each class of flows, and then based upon that, the service for the flow will be given the minimum rate, and it'll automatically degrade into the other service. Okay, so that is the interesting aspect of this. Okay, so this just is a restatement of what we talked about earlier. Okay, and the reason the oversubscription works is it uses this ratio idea. I told you that the ratio of accumulations, or rewritten this way, is the ratio of rates. Okay, so what I'm doing is, if I want to give a flow a minimum rate guarantee and a proportional fair share, I pretend that there are actually two virtual flows going on the same path end to end. Remember that if I have two virtual flows going on the same path end to end, they have the same ratios, right? So, and then I assume that there is one piece of accumulation. So, I assume that the total accumulation is broken up into two parts. One is AIE and AIP. One piece of the accumulation corresponds to the proportional fair allocation. One piece corresponds to the XIE allocation. And it satisfies this nice ratio behavior. AIE by XIE is equal to AIP by XIP and AI by XI. Okay, because these are all same virtual flows going on the same path. Okay. And so you can sort of manipulate these equations and find what is the formula for AIP. Okay, so what happens is that if you have oversubscription, this thing will fall out. Okay, so during oversubscription, the sum of the nominal allocations XIE tilde, I'm just not used great notation, but essentially this is oversubscribed. So what you'll do is this equation cannot be satisfied anymore. So you essentially drop out that problem and solve. The auxiliary problem will drop out, and the rate allocation is determined by the primal problem or the primary problem. Okay, so in a sense, I am gracefully degrading it to weighted proportional fair share. Now, all this might sound very complicated, but the actual implementation is embarrassingly simple. Okay, so the way this works is, I talked about the total AI is XI multiplied by the queuing delay, AIE is XIE multiplied by the queuing delay, and AIP is just the difference. So the control law we implement has a nonlinear term max. Okay, and remember that I had a similar formulation for a general class of control methods. So AIP minus AIP star is the proportional fair type allocation, and AI minus capital AI star for the case that the first problem cannot be solved or the auxiliary problem cannot be solved, and I have a max formulation of this. Okay, so this is the thing, and this is how the window will change, and this is just a gain factor. Okay, now one issue with this is essentially if I want to allocate larger fair shares, or I want to give a minimum rate, and I want to oversubscribe the network, it is possible that the queuing might actually build up, okay, because accumulation is in fact real queuing. Okay, so one way to manage queuing is to use AQM schemes. Okay, now this is the first step. Actually, we are doing other steps at this point. The schemes proposed by Kunior and Srikanth called AVQ or adaptive virtual queue basically takes capacity and scales it by a factor, and you have gamma times the capacity, and you pretend that the packets are actually being queued for that virtual capacity. So you're building up a virtual queue and virtual delay on a virtual capacity, and when the packets start dropping in the virtual queue, then you actually drop packets in the real queue. In effect, the real queue will be small, but you can maintain high utilization. So, recent work from them shows that you have new degrees of freedom, which we are also working on exploiting from an architectural perspective. So essentially what we do is consider that now instead of actually building up a real queue, okay, remember what I wanted is I needed the delay information, right? So suppose instead of having a real delay, I can use virtual delay. Okay, I can also compute what is the accumulation contribution of that virtual delay. Okay, so virtual delay is nothing but virtual queue by virtual capacity. So we essentially modify this AVQ and stamp this on packets which are going by. And then accumulation, the modified definition is that in the queues where AVQ has been implemented, we can use the virtual delay or sigma of virtual delay on those queues. And then in the queues where AQQ is not implemented, I'll just use the real delay. Okay, so I can have a mix of AQM and non-AQM schemes. So AQM is optional in this methodology. So I'm now going to go through a quick series of results, starting with the simple multiple flows through single bottleneck. All these are implementation results. Okay, so these are done on Linux and Emulab and so on, actually. So it's beyond just simulations. Okay, and we are going to deploy this stuff on a Planet Lab as a public service, so other people can actually start using this. And as part of that, we will have to deal with other more delay variance issues, etc. Okay, now first question we wanted to see was that loss-based schemes don't give you even weighted services. Can I achieve true weighted services? If you look at Kelly's formulation, from the equilibrium specification, immediately you say this, you can easily achieve weighted fair shares. It turns out that it's not so straightforward unless you use either an ECN-based mechanism or an accumulation-based mechanism. If you use a loss-based, and like if you use AIMD, you cannot get that range. So here we show that I can get expected minimum rates up to the point where I have specified capital A or the accumulation limit, and beyond that, it becomes a weighted fair share service. Okay, so this diagram here essentially shows what is the throughput of the flow for which I'm guaranteeing something. And this actually is the result of multiple experiments where I'm increasing the expected rate of this flow on and on, and seeing where how close am I getting these squares, or where my actual allocation is in my experiments. And this is the expected min rate, and then I'm getting a fair share on top of this. You see here, the fair share actually decreases. But the point I'm trying to make is that our results are on the dot in terms of what we expect. Okay, this is a steady state result. Okay, it turns out that this actually is better than even DiffServ. If you look at how DiffServ works, it does a buffer management scheme where you have differential buffer management. When packets, when you have an overload situation, you drop lower priority packets. That's the general thing which has been specified. Essentially, what we show is that Rio is actually a special case of what we are trying to do. This is actually the curve for Rio. It's not very obvious here. Essentially, it shows that Rio also tries to give you a minimum rate and then degrades to weighted rate. But it drops off much faster than our scheme. Okay, and you don't have precise sharing as we can expect in our scheme. Okay, the penalty, as I said, without AQM is that the queue lengths, appropriate queue lengths, as I start giving higher and higher of my total bandwidth provision for the service, it will start increasing. So the rule of thumb is that you don't want to, if you don't want to use AQM schemes, you don't want to allocate a large fraction of your total capacity for the minimum rate guarantees. Okay, so then you can manage have low queuing as well. But if you put an AVQ plus virtual delay mechanism, as I talked about, essentially you maintain the queue at 1. Okay. Okay, so this is an example showing that even Rio doesn't do very well. We've done more complex situations where I have some routers which do AVQ, here this does AVQ, this does not do AVQ, and I have a variety of flows which start at different points of time, I have some web noise, etc. Okay, so here's a simple, my goodness, not so simple. So if you look at this graph, in the first phase, I have no oversubscription. It illustrates all the aspects. In the first phase, I have no oversubscription. And these blue and purple lines are the targets which I want to achieve. You see that there is a transient phase which reflects the base congestion control scheme that we use, which can be made better. But after this transient phase, you have rock solid steady state, which and around the target values. Okay, and after that, suppose something changes, like in this case, some moderate oversubscription happens, then you have some degradation of service, but here the service degradation is well defined. So you have a clear and clear expectation of what your service is going to, what's going to happen to your service, which is can be thought of as a weak QoS mechanism. Okay, so when I have more oversubscription, this degrades further into weighted service. And then when these things stop sending, you get back to your original allocations. Okay, so these transients are results of the scheme. Okay, and so we have not fully looked at all possible schemes. So as the congestion control folks come up with better and better schemes for handling transients, we can use them. Okay, now as I add web noise, as expected in other congestion control studies, it just adds more variance around the steady state, and it does not affect the steady state or equilibrium allocations by itself.
Web noise?
Oh, it's basically lots of.
You consider the capacity to change according to this noise?
Oh, essentially, what I'm doing is in the diagram I had earlier, I had lots of maybe 50 or 100 web flows in the background, which are uncontrolled by this. So when I say web noise, this is a term which Srikanth has coined. Essentially, what it means is that web flows are short-lived flows, and in particular in this case, I'm not controlling them using our closed-loop congestion control scheme. So they essentially eat up capacity and leave up capacity.
So how do you take them into consideration in your optimization problem?
I mean, they're outside. I mean, basically, it varies my available capacity.
Okay, so it's
yeah,
okay.
So it's equivalent to. No, it's like regular congestion control. I mean, all I'm doing is I'm having regular congestion control. The only difference is, if you see here, is these parameter settings are different. That's all. I mean, so you can view this entire talk as though it is just a congestion control talk with differential parameter settings. The new parameters which we introduce are this capital AI. That's the only difference. But with that, we can actually achieve some goals which don't look like normal congestion control goals. In congestion control, we are interested in fairness. Okay, we are not, what we are trying to argue is quality of service allocation is a special form of fairness. So, and in this particular simulation, we're just modeling web flows as perturbing our steady state capacity.
So, do you add to the capacity the average web flow so that you account for that on the average, or is it
subtracted? Yeah,
subtract.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, this is done edge to edge, right? So basically, the capacity changes will be reflected in queuing changes and in accumulation changes. So it automatically works that way. So what will happen is that I might have some rate increases, decreases, which is reflected as these extra rate increases, decreases. I think, I mean, it just depends upon the amount of web flows which are uncontrolled by this thing. If you look at the configuration here, I went through that fairly quickly here. I have actually quite a lot of web flows. I mean, 500 web flows. So it's not trivial. I mean, this also reflects the fact that lots of flows could be web and or short-lived flows. But in this particular case, I'm assuming these web flows are not controlled by a paradigm. In practice, If I'm offering a leased line type service, web flows would be mapped to this, servers, and so on.
It has to depend on what the variation is. I mean,
that's correct.
If it's constant, then it doesn't make any difference.
That's right. So my
the capacity by that amount, but if
right.
there is
significant variation.
Then the question is how sensitive is your.
That's right.
You can come up with a better control scheme.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. That is correct. I mean, so only thing we are trying to show is that empirically that this is the variation offered by 500 web flows, which are operating simultaneously. And you're right, pointing out that, I mean, if I have, say, 500,000 web flows, obviously the magnitude of variation will be larger. And what we could do is we can replace the base congestion control scheme with something that's more resilient to that variation, and also we can replace it with something that has better transient performance and still use our framework of the accumulation constraints. So this is intended to be a sort of framework that can fit into any new developments in condition control. Okay. Can we move on? Okay, so we've also tested the case of what we call service multiplexing. If I take a network and offer both expected rate services as well as weighted services for some flows and a normal unweighted services for the other flows, the scheme still works, okay, because it just comes out of the equilibrium allocations. So I don't want to go into the great detail, but you can see that in the steady state, these targets as specified are achieved. Okay. Now, if I have a non-AQM scheme, you'll see that as the degree of subscription increases, and the flows actually show up, you will have increasing queue lengths, steady state queue lengths. Okay, so this is because accumulation is real queue. I mean, the sum of all accumulation is sum of all queuing. And with web noise, you see a variation in this queuing, which reflects as variation in accumulation, which reflects as variation in rate allocation. In the earlier diagram, the queue variation is far more, actually. So, whereas if I use the AQM scheme in particular routers, these are much better controlled. So the queuing is always one or so, basically it's minimum queuing. And the magnitude of the oscillations are also controlled. So again, this can be addressed and the transients can be addressed. And you see these blips correspond to transients of the schemes. Okay, so to summarize, the DiffServ philosophy has brought into, I mean, if DiffServ has done a lot of bad things, but in one of the good things it did was to bring in a philosophy, architectural philosophy, that you want to have a qualitative range of services. Don't think of quality of service as just one quantitative guarantee and so on. You can have anything better than best effort can be thought of as quality of service. So you can think of a spectrum of capabilities all the way from best effort to what you can achieve with a leased line or an equivalent of a packet-based leased line in IP. So you can just think of it as a better performance. I mean, assuming this doesn't look at the routing dimension, assuming that the routes are fixed. Okay, in the other talk I gave in Eurocom on the other day, I showed how we can deal with the routing problem in a similar way. And in general, quality of service can be, we normally think of specifying it a priori by a set of parameters. But the reality is that if you use a congestion controls methodology, the quality of service, quote unquote, we get is what is in steady state, or we can think of this as a posteriori measures and so on. In fact, if you just take a best effort service, you can only specify parameters at the granularity of the entire population rather than granularity of per flow, and you can only measure it a posteriori. That is the meaning of best effort. You cannot actually guarantee anything beforehand or a priori. So this essentially cements a more weaker and broader view of QoS. And the argument we try to make is that just because I have a weaker view of QoS doesn't mean the service is weak. Okay, just like best effort was an extremely weak service, but it supported a vast range of applications, we see a future where even by weakening the service, we have actually gained in other dimensions. Like we can now start thinking about not worrying about admission control, which means you don't have to worry about signaling, and you can do longer-term provisioning just at the edges of the network, and you can do more application-involved management at the edges of the network rather than trying to get application knowledge all the way into the core of the network. You see what I mean? So these are other architectural windfalls we get from this. Okay, so in fact, there are other examples of approaches which are of this form. Recently, there has been an approach proposed by Ian Stoica's group which uses FEC, which is an open-loop mechanism rather than a closed-loop mechanism, but it achieves only much more weaker capabilities than what we can do in closed-loop. If you look at CSFQ, DiffServe, and dynamic packet state, etc., these achieve more, okay, because you put more functions inside the network and so on. If you look at our graphs where we showed virtual delay, right, you saw that the steady-state queuing was very small, okay. Now, this, if I put AVQ everywhere and if I use this edge-based mechanism, we can have the interesting combination of bandwidth guarantees and loss guarantees because there's nothing lost inside the network and low queuing delay. Okay, so if you notice, the main goals of QoS is to manage delay, manage loss, manage bandwidth. So we are able to achieve all these goals in steady state via just a congestion control methodology. The keyword is steady state, and the quality of the congestion control underlying building block, which is used. Okay, so there's certainly lots of work in this space, and we can leverage all these developments. Okay, and certainly we intend as systems people to actually incorporate these things into the real internet. So we are working with Planet Lab to actually deploy this business. Okay, and InServe and ATM and other stuff lie towards the end of the spectrum. Okay, so. So the summary of this talk was that we viewed this as a congestion control problem, and this has some interesting architectural features like getting rid of admission control, moving all the complexity to the edges, and only using congestion control essentially ideas. And the schemes which we have developed, like Monaco, which are accumulation-based schemes, we just abstractly we formulated this as a steering parameter, which gives us a degree of freedom to provide all these capabilities. And with AQM support, we can essentially deal with zero queues. Okay, now currently we are working on a problem where AQM requires, support inside the network. Okay, and our broader objective was to remove support from the network. So we are, I cannot divulge all the details now, but we are essentially using, we are trying to emulate AVQ from the edges of the network. Okay, that is, we are trying to achieve the same goals as what AVQ can do without the network. Then it brings into question, why do you really need AQM at all, right? So we can achieve this purely from edge to edge. Okay, hopefully I'll report on that later. Okay, so the technical issues where we just introduce a new convex constraint, the capital AI, the Lagrange domain, that is on the accumulation and also the queue length, which we pretty much ignored in this talk. And in the current and future work are pretty much systems work and the other work I talked about, AQM emulation, edge to edge. And we are also developing and mapping multimedia applications. We are taking off the shelf. Our vision is the following. In the future, we'll have AOL or Microsoft or Yahoo offering consumer apps, which can then talk to overlay networks. Okay, and overlay networks will provide this weak service. Okay, you can buy a subscription-based platinum service or something like that. And then whenever you need performance from the network, when your application shows up based upon your application attributes and your grade of service, you will be assigned a number AI. Okay, that's our view. And then this entire service can be delivered end-to-end. And in my other talk, I showed how we can also use overlays to provide multipath. So we are actually integrating these two projects and deploying it on an overlay network to demonstrate these attributes. Okay, I guess that's it. Thank you.